there's a reason why I want to talk for a while about the history of Christmas, because just recently, several of our own members, young people, came to me and asked me some questions about it, and I thought perhaps it would be a good time for us to address it. And perhaps this is something that is really on our mind, especially if you watch the news, because of the what we call the current culture war in our society, where it becomes obvious that there are some who would like to remove any remembrance of God or any remembrance of Jesus completely from our society. In fact, some would even want to rewrite the very history of our country. And so it really then becomes something that really becomes something on the mind of Christians about the history of Christmas and the things surrounding it. So today I want to talk for a while about that. And first of all, this morning, I want us to talk about some of the misconceptions that we find in our society, been taught by men, about the very birth of Jesus. It's interesting that according to A.T. Robertson's, in his Harmony of the Gospel, he gives us several facts concerning the early days of Jesus that I think are very significant. First of all, in the second chapter of the Gospel of Luke, we find the record of the birth of Jesus. And then just after that, according to Luke's Gospel in chapter 2, beginning with verse 8, on the very night that Jesus was born, we find that he was visited, of course, by the shepherds. After their visit, in the 21st verse of the same chapter, 8 days according to the law, the young man then was taken by his parent and was circumcised. And then 40 days after the birth of this male child, he was taken and presented to the Lord. He was sanctified, became holy to God, and the woman would offer a sacrifice because the days of her purification were over, and this was 40 days later. Then, according to Robertson, it was after that time, according to the book of Matthew, in the second chapter of the Gospel of Matthew, that men from the east, the magi, or the wise men, came and visited the child. After that, there was a journey to Egypt. You remember that God had instructed the wise men that they were not to go back to Herod, because now Herod was wanting to kill all of the children. And also God instructed Joseph that he was to take Mary and the newborn baby, and they were to go to Egypt to get away from the wrath of Herod, because Herod had determined that he was going to kill all the children, all the males, from 2 years old and under. And then finally, we find the record of that, of course, in Matthew chapter 2 and verses 16 through 18, where Herod had determined that he was going to kill these male children. But there's a reason why I bring all of this up. And that is because when we come to the visit of the wise men, we find that actually the wise men did not come to the scene of the manger that commonly we find depicted in paintings and perhaps nativity scenes that are common in our society about this time of the year. But the reality is that the wise men probably came at least 40 days after the birth of Jesus. And sometime right before Joseph and Mary took their child and they fled into Egypt. Now there's a reason why I mentioned this, because number one, concerning the birth of Jesus, there are a number of misconceptions that people have about the wise men. Number one, we don't really know how many there were. To say that there were three is nothing more than mere speculation. The Bible really doesn't tell us how many. It does say they brought gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, but that doesn't suggest the number of men. The Bible simply doesn't tell us how many wise men there were. Now, I don't know how important that is, but commonly we think of the three wise men as depicted in nativity scenes and according to the tradition of men. And then number two, their visit was not on the same night. You probably had the scene where the actors reenact the birth of Jesus, and after the shepherds leave, and they have the wise men come to the scene, to the manger scene. But the reality is, they did not come on the same night of his birth, but probably sometime later. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, travel time. They came from the east. It would take quite a time, quite a while for them to arrive. And number two, it's interesting that in the book of Matthew, the second chapter in verse 16, the record makes this observation about the reaction of Herod. That then Herod, when he saw that he was deceived by the wise men, was exceedingly angry,
And he sent forth and put to death all the male children who were in Bethlehem and in all the districts from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the wise men. Therefore Herod chose to kill all male children from 2 years old and under. Why? To make sure that this child was dead. Because the reality is that Herod recognized that this child had been born, had been around for quite a while. Then the third observation that I make is that they didn't find Jesus, according to Matthew's account, in a manger. But rather the wise men actually found Jesus and the parents of Jesus in a house. You look in the book of Matthew, the second chapter, and in verse 11, and you will notice that they found Jesus in a house. But then there's something else that I want us to consider about the birth of Jesus, and that is, what about the day of Jesus' birth? First of all, the year. And then secondly, not only the year, but the month and the day. According to Halley's Bible Pocket Handbook, page 436, he says, when Christ was born, time was reckoned in the Roman Empire from the founding of the city of Rome. When Christianity became the universal religion over what had been the Roman world, a monk named Dionysius Exiguus, at the request of the Emperor Justinian, made a calendar, 526 AD, reckoning time from the birth of Christ to supersede the Roman calendar. Several years later, it was found that Dionysius made a mistake in placing the birth of Jesus in the year 753 AD, you see, that is, from the founding of the city of Rome. It should have been 749. So Christ was not born, as commonly people think, in 1 AD or 0, but rather he was born probably in 4 BC. But more significant than that is the birth, is the month and the day. According to Barnes' notes in the New Testament, he said, it is also a fact that the Jews sent their flocks into the mountainous and desert region during the summer months and took them up in the latter part of October, the first part of November. While away in these desert and mountain regions, it was proper that there should be someone to attend to them to keep them from straying. It is probable that our Savior was born before the 25th of December, or before what we call Christmas. At that time, it was cold, and of course all the sheep would be gathered together and no longer out in the desert. But the exact time of his birth is unknown, and there is no way to ascertain it. In fact, speculation has been that Jesus may have been born on the 6th of January, some say the 25th of March, and others say the 25th of December. Concerning the same matter, Collier's Encyclopedia said, it is impossible to determine the exact date of the birth of Christ, either from the evidence of the Gospels or any sound tradition. And furthermore, we find, according to the Catholic Encyclopedia, Christmas was not among the earliest festivals of the Church. Never do you find the apostles keeping Christmas Day. Don't find that in the New Testament. So the question arises then, why December the 25th? According to Collier's Encyclopedia, it says that Liberius, Bishop of Rome, in 354 AD, ordered that December 25 be adopted. The choice of this date was probably influenced by the fact that this was on the day in which the Romans celebrated the Maitreic Feast of the Sun God. The indications are that the Church in this way grasped the opportunity to turn the people away from a purely pagan observance of the winter solstice to a day of adoration of Christ the Lord. Furthermore, concerning the same question, according to the Lincoln Library of Essential Information, December 25 was already a festive day for the sun god Mithra and appealed to the Christians as an appropriate day to commemorate the birth of Jesus, the light of the world. The point is that the observance of Christmas did not originate with God, but rather, celebrating the birth of Jesus on December the 21st originated from the traditions of men. That's the reality of it. So what about some of the Christian customs First of all, number one, the very idea or the name Christmas, where did we get that name? It comes from the idea of the Mass of Christ. You can talk to Debbie about that, or to Christy about that and their background. They probably can tell you a little more about it than I can. But according to Compton's Encyclopedia, it says, old as our Christmas festival is, many of the customs and ceremonies associated with it are far older. They got their start thousands of years before the Christian era. For our pagan forefathers used to celebrate the winter solstice as the birthday of the sun. Christmas, as it has been well said, is like a big seed in which everything most beautiful, most significant, most potent, and most lively, both in heathendom and in Christianity, remained while all that was trivial fell through and blew away. And then, according to Encyclopedia Americana, the celebration was not observed in the first centuries of the Christian church, since the Christian usage in general was used to celebrate the death of remarkable persons rather than the birth. I want to make a couple of observations about Christ's Mass, or the Mass of Christ, and the perversions of it. Number one, in the New Testament, we never find the apostles or the early Christians celebrating the birth of anyone. In fact, you think about baptism, you think about the Lord's Supper, you think about the first day of the week. What do those emphasize? Not the birth of Jesus, but rather the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Early New Testament Christians did not celebrate the birth as much as they celebrated the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, and this they did upon the first day of the week. Baptism reminds us of the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. We find, according to Paul in 1 Corinthians 11, instruction concerning the Lord's Supper, and Christians assembling upon the first day of the week to remember the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. But furthermore, the very Catholic idea of Mass is a very perversion of the concept of the Lord's Supper. Catholics tell us every time the Mass is said that Christ is re-sacrificed. According to the book of Hebrews, the 9th chapter, that's simply not so. In Hebrews chapter 9, and beginning with verse 23, we find that the Hebrew writer says, therefore it was necessary that the copies of the things in heaven should be purified with these, but the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. For Christ has not entered the holy places made with hands, which are copies of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us, not that he should offer himself often, as the high priest enters the most holy place every year with the blood of another. He then would have to suffer often since the foundation of the world, but now once at the end of the ages, he has appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself, and as it is appointed to men to die once, after this the judgment, so Christ was offered once to bear the sins of many. To those who eagerly wait for him, he will appear a second time apart from sin for salvation. Therefore, the idea, the very concept and idea of Christ's Mass is a perversion. It is nothing more than a tradition of men, but it did not originate with God. And it's interesting that while it originated with the Catholics, the Protestants, who are also supposedly protesting against the corruptions of the Catholic Church, have borrowed that tradition from Catholicism. Most Protestant denominations also celebrate the birth of Jesus. But then what about Santa Claus? Where did he come from? Well, first of all, St. Nicholas was a bishop of the 4th century, and he was born in the city of Myra. And furthermore, he was regarded as the patron saint of children. In fact, it was after his death that they thought that after he died and went away, that he would still bring gifts from heaven. And therefore, the children began to call him the gift bringer. And the truth of the matter is that there are songs that are sung even today in our modern society that are devoted to this saint. And I just simply leave you with a question. Should we be teaching our children to pray to a saint? Or should we be teaching our children to sing songs to a saint? Well, that's just something for you to think about. Also, furthermore, his red suit is somewhat like the Catholic bishop's robe. Or what about the Christmas tree? Tree worship was common in the Scandinavian countries. When the pagans in northern Europe became Christians, they made their sacred evergreen trees part of the Christian festival and decorated the trees with gilded nuts, candles, and apples to stand for the stars, moon, and sun. The early church frowned on the use of evergreen because of their association with early pagan worship. Or what about the nativity scene? The manger, which was so common in Christian decorations of the day, was first introduced by a Catholic saint. On Christmas Eve of 1224 AD, St. Francis in a little village church of Assisi made the first manger scene that we have record of. If you want this, by the way, I'll be glad to make copies. And I want to acknowledge that several people have helped me in putting this together. I've got a file of stuff on it. And Brother Phil Jenkins and several others have put together information that I borrowed. But then also, what about the Christmas lights? One of the popular feasts of the Jews is the Feast of Lights, sometimes known as the Feast of Maccabees, and as the Feast of Hanukkah, meaning dedication. This festival, like Christmas, comes during the latter part of December. Our Christmas lights are a counterpart of the Jewish Festival of Lights. Then what about gift giving? According to the history of Christmas, the book, the custom of gift giving seems to go back to the ancient Romans, who distributed gifts in the course of their midwinter festival, the solstice. The Christmas stocking come from an Italian practice associated with January 6th. The fairy Befana is supposed to fill the stockings of children in accordance with their desires. The naughty children, of course, then receive dashes. Or, now finally, the question is, so is it wrong to celebrate Christmas? First of all, if we're talking about as a church, yes, absolutely. There is absolutely no authority for a church to celebrate the birth of Jesus. We don't find that anywhere in the New Testament. God is silent. As I stated before, God has specified and specifically stated that first of all, Christians assemble on the first day of the week, that was the day of his resurrection, for the purpose of taking the Lord's Supper, that is for the purpose of remembering the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. We certainly have authority to assemble and worship. And we certainly have authority to assemble, as we have done today, to remember the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, but to establish a holy day that is dedicated to the birth of Jesus, that's a tradition of man, but it did not come from God, and therefore we have no authority to do that. But commonly the question arises not necessarily with regard to what we do collectively, but rather the question often arises of what about us individually? In fact, a question was asked me a while back, and it was a good one. Is it a sin to think about the birth of Jesus this time of the year? I don't know how you would avoid that. And my answer to that is no. It is not a sin to think about the birth of Jesus at any time of the year. There's a difference in thinking about the birth of Jesus and setting aside a holy day that is dedicated to the birth of Jesus. There's a big difference between the two. And to say that it is a sin to even think about the birth of Jesus, I think would be, well, we'd have to have thoughtfully, we really have to guard our thoughts. We'd have to probably just pretty much absolve ourselves from society altogether. No, I don't think it's a sin to think about the birth of Jesus. In fact, I want to give you a couple examples, not that they are the standard, but when I was growing up, I had 22 cousins. And the whole family would gather together at my grandparents' house on the 24th and 25th of December for the purpose of being together as a family. And my grandfather would commonly, either most of the time in a church setting, as a preacher or as a Bible class teacher, would have something to say about the birth of Jesus. And one of the reasons why is because he said there are so many misconceptions, things that are taught about the birth of Jesus that are simply not found in the New Testament, and I want you, my grandchildren, to be aware of that. Another example of the same thing was Nancy's father. There were times when he would take the grandchildren and read the story of the birth of Jesus and talk about it, and talk about why Jesus came to earth, what it meant to us, what it ought to mean to us, and many of the perversions and concepts and ideas that people have about why Jesus even came to earth and misconceptions they have about his birth. So no, I don't think it's wrong to think about Jesus at this time of year, as far as that's concerned, any other time of year. But then the question commonly, the other question is, is it wrong for us to have a civil observance of Christmas? By the way, incidentally, it was declared a national holiday in 1670, according to President Ulysses S. Grant. That's when it became officially a national holiday in our country. So is it wrong for us to take the day off? Or is it wrong for us as a family to gather together, to put up a decorated tree, to exchange colorful gifts? In my opinion, no. That's my opinion. But nonetheless, not only I say no, but at the same time, with some considerations and guidelines. For example, over in the book of 1 Corinthians, the 8th chapter, the Apostle Paul, I think, gives us some guidelines with regard to a civil observance of this holiday. And by the way, holiday, where'd that come from? We call July the 4th a holiday. What is the real meaning of holiday? What is its origin? Holy day. In fact, even the observance of one's birthday goes back to the heathens. So that what we would call it. To ancient tradition and to the observance and worship of the gods. But I've never thought of when I celebrate my birthday, we're worshiping the gods. But in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 8, I want you to notice something that is stated in 1 Corinthians 8, beginning with verse 1. Now concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. And if anyone thinks that he knows anything, he knows nothing as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, this one is known by him. Therefore, concerning the eating of things offered to idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world, and that there is no other God but one. Stop there. First of all, in the New Testament setting, the common thing was that you would have meats that were offered and sacrificed to idols, false gods. And then that meat was sold in the common marketplace and eaten for common food. And Paul, the problem was that many of these new converts had been converted from idolatry. And therefore, they had, as we find at Ephesus, taken their images and their idols and burned them and given them up. But the problem was, is that Paul said, here's a dilemma. You have meat offered as a sacrifice to idols that is eaten as common food. And the first observation that I want to make, Paul says, is that we know, those of us who have knowledge, we know that an idol is nothing. I suppose I might just interject and say, we know that a Christmas tree is nothing. Now, whether it's right or wrong, you know, I don't pretend to be the standard, so don't accept what I say. But from a very young child, I've been around Christmas trees all of my life, and I never have thought of it as worshiping a tree. It's just something we do for fun. Just the fun of it. To exchange gifts and to have a tree is just for the fun of it. Paul says we know that an idol is nothing. We know there's only one God. But furthermore, he says down in verse 9, but beware lest somehow this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to those who are weak. In fact, back up to verse 7. He says, however, there is not in every one this knowledge, for some with consciousness of the idol, until now eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. That is, there are some of your brethren, when they see you eating meat that was offered and sacrificed to idols, will think that it's okay to go back to idolatry. There's not everyone has this knowledge. But food does not commend us to God, for neither if we eat are we the better, nor if we eat are we the worse. But beware lest this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to those who are weak. The point is that it's okay to have a Christmas tree, that is in my opinion, and that's just my judgment. But be careful lest someone think that it's okay to observe the Mass of Christ. Or be careful lest someone think it is okay to worship a tree. Be careful how you use it. If anyone sees you have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered in idols? And because of your knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. But when you thus sin against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother to stumble, I will never again eat meat, lest I make my brother to stumble. If I thought that for 1 minute that I was going to encourage my brother to observe an unofficial mass tradition of man, I would take it down. If I thought I was going to encourage my brother to worship an idol, or worship a tree, I would remove it. But then there is something else also. Look with me in the book of Romans, the 14th chapter, and beginning with verse 21. In Romans chapter 14 and verse 21, concerning the same matters, that is, the eating of meats, some thought it was wrong, some thought it was okay. He says in verse 21, It is good neither to eat meat nor drink wine nor do anything by which your brother stumbles or is offended or is made weak. Do you have faith? Have it to yourself before God. Happy is he who does not condemn himself in what he approves. But he who doubts is condemned to these, because he does not eat from faith, for whatever is not from faith is sin. My point is that I do know some brethren who think that it is wrong to observe Christmas as a civil holiday. I will not encourage them to do that. I'm not going to say, look, you come to my house, you're going to sit before my tree, our little decorated tree, you're going to eat our meal, and you're going to exchange gifts. I will not force them to do something that would wound their conscience or violate their conscience, because by so doing, then I would cause them to engage in sin. So the question is it wrong to observe it as a civil holiday? In my opinion, no. But also with some guidelines. In fact, I have known and had family members who thought it was wrong to have a tree. And there have been times when I wouldn't put a tree up because I didn't want to violate their conscience. That's the way we handled it. And I think that was the way to handle it. But one of the things that we need to think about that's more important than anything we talked about today is the reason why Jesus came to earth to begin with. You know, in the Philippian letter, in Philippians chapter 2, we find that the Apostle Paul says in verse 6, who being in the form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. Therefore, God has also highly exalted him and given him a name that is above every name, that the name of Jesus every knee should bow, those in heaven and those on earth and those under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. because he loved me so. He didn't have to do it. By choice, he came and lived in this world with all the sorrow and heartache and pain, and he willingly went to the cross and died so that you and I might be redeemed from sin. And that's what we need to think about. Why did Jesus come? Why was he here? Though he was rich, Paul said, yet for your sake he became poor, that you through his poverty might be rich. He came so that I could be reconciled with God and redeemed from sin. If you're here today and not a child of God, if there's anything that we can do to help you to make sure that your life is right with him, we invite you to come and stand and sing the song.
Hear those.